behind the scenes on Capitol Hill. Republican leaders have now decided to rescue Congressman Veldy, the man who wanted to investigate the churches. A half dozen Republicans have been assigned to defend Veldy next week, led by Congressman Jackson of California, in an effort to show that he was misquoted about probing the churches. However, just to keep the record straight, I can tell you that Veldy had already ordered his investigators in Boston to start looking into the clergy at the same time they were probing the school. The White House exclusive. While Republican clamor against secret agreements continues, President Eisenhower clamped an even stricter secrecy on the British-American talks with Anthony Eden, stricter than any conference since Yalta. However, I'm able to report the secret commitment that Eisenhower made to the British in return for their promise to quit trading with Red China. This commitment is something both Congress and the public should know, even though some people don't want it on the radio. First, we agreed not to launch any new military operation in the Far East without consulting London. Second, we agreed not to use our bases in Britain for bombing attacks without a British okay. Third, we pledged to support the British position in Iran regarding oil. That's very important because hitherto we have not agreed with the British. And that was the secret understanding made at the White House last week. London exclusive. British intelligence reports Premier Malenkov is set to launch a ruthless purge of older communist leaders. He plans to replace them with younger men who had no strong ties with Stalin. Malenkov's aim is said to be to make sure the old-timers don't plot against him, and that may explain the sudden death of President Gottwald in Czechoslovakia. Now, here's my own personal report on the very serious events taking place in Europe. Premier Malenkov told the Supreme Soviet today that all problems between Russia and the United States can be solved by peaceful agreement. But the real fact is that Malenkov has moved much more quickly and ruthlessly than anyone expected in demoting Stalin's friends and putting himself in complete power. Obviously, he's afraid of trouble in the satellite nations. That was probably one reason for the deliberate shooting down of American-British airplanes last week. Malenkov wanted to show the satellites and us that he is a hard-boiled, almost sadist dictator, brooking no challenge to his power. That was why the American embassy in Moscow warned the State Department to be extremely careful in dealing with Russia in the next few weeks. Malenkov appears to have an inferiority complex and is probably worried over his security. He may order more demonstrations of bloody might. In brief, despite Malenkov's words to the Supreme Soviet today, I regret to report that the world appears to have moved a bit closer to war. London. British businessmen preparing for the coronation have taken out $8.5 million in insurance in case Queen Elizabeth gets sick. If the coronation should be postponed, they'd be left with all sorts of supplies on hand. Washington. Well, the sun-friendly sons of St. Patrick will be wearing of the green Tuesday night, and conspiring and celebrating with them will be the Chief Justice Fred Vinson himself, Speaker Joe Martin, and the plumber in the cabinet, Secretary Durkin. I hope to be there myself, DeGaudy. Baltimore. Senator Jenner of Indiana has subpoenaed every Johns Hopkins professor who contributed to the defense of their fellow professor, Owen Lattimore. He wants to discourage the raising of any more defense funds. Jenner will soon take his investigation on a road tour, New York, Philadelphia, Boston, and Buffalo, but carefully staying out of his home state, Indiana. Now, it's hard to talk about personal problems, but I'd like to say just a word or two about covering the news in Washington as of today. During the Hoover administration, Bob Allen and I, unable to publish in the press or radio some of the things that were happening in Washington, wrote a book, The Washington Merry-Go-Round. We wrote it anonymously because, frankly, we were scared. Scared we would lose our newspaper jobs. And it turned out that we were right. When word finally got out regarding the anonymous authors, we were fired. Well, those were days of largely a one-party press, and that party didn't want certain embarrassing facts reported about its administration in Washington. Today, I'm happy to report that the press is much freer. Though there are certain one-party newspapers, such as the Des Moines Register, the Minneapolis Star-Journal, the Dallas News, which don't want certain facts published about their friends in Washington when those facts are embarrassing. But against several thousand newspapers, there are only four national radio and TV networks. In effect, four men can just about control what millions of people see and hear. Now, this is a tremendous responsibility. The airwaves that these networks use are loaned them by license from the government. They're not their property. They belong to all the people, though gradually certain radio executives have come to look upon them as their own personal property. This is getting to be one of our great national problems. For freedom of the press or air is not freedom to make money. It's not freedom to suppress the news or neglect the news. It's a freedom and a duty to ferret out the news, both pleasant and unpleasant, both embarrassing and unembarrassing, and to let the public be the final judge what to believe. In certain countries of Europe, we have one-party radio and one-party government. Now, we in this country have considered this unhealthy, even dangerous. But the real danger is that this two-party nation of ours, a chorus of similar voices on four radio networks, may speak as the voice of government.
Predictions that have proved 83% accurate.
Number one, I predict that the man who will replace President Gottwald as Red Boss of Czechoslovakia will be Antonin Zapotocky, the man who denounced me for sending propaganda balloons into Czechoslovakia. Prediction number two, a serious army scandal. Most people don't know it, but feathers are important for the military. They're used for insulation in army sleeping bags, all important for Korea and for any war fought in the frozen north, which might well happen. So here is my prediction. If there's a probe of army sleeping bags, I predict it will involve jail sentences for certain guilty people. I also predict it'll be found that mixed with the feathers in sleeping bags will be 50% adulterated material, which does not protect men from the cold. Prediction number three, storm over Kansas. Eastern newspapers haven't published much about it, and the AP has been rather meager in its coverage, but a committee of Kansas legislators is now probing the lobbying activities of the new chairman of the Republican National Committee, Wesley Roberts. Six former state officials, including ex-Governor Ben Paulin, have testified that the building Roberts sold the state of Kansas for $110,000 would have reverted to the state anyway. On this, Roberts got a fee of $11,000. Roberts also admitted taking a fee of $3,700 from city service for only 8 weeks' work while the Kansas legislature was in session. This is also embarrassing because the head of city service, Alton D. Jones, is a great friend of Eisenhower's. Gave a Christmas cocktail party for him at the Waldorf and golfed with him the other day at Augusta. However, Roberts, instead of resigning, tried last week to blame two alert newspaper men, Robert McCormley of the Harris Newspapers and Alvin McCoy of the Kansas City Star, for all his troubles. So here is my prediction. Al Flandin, number one Republican of Kansas, who has already asked Eisenhower not to close his eyes to the facts, will deliver a scorching speech April 10 calling for a political cleanup and saying that a change from Bill Boyle to Wesley Roberts is no change at all. I also predict that unless Roberts resigns by March 28, and I think he will, then the Attorney General of Kansas himself will move and the state of Kansas will go Democratic at the next election. Now, ladies and gentlemen, this is especially for American citizens of Italian descent. I won't be on the air to remind you of this just before the Italian elections, but let's send another deluge of Make Democracy Live letters to Italy before your friends and relatives vote in late May. The national elections then are probably the most important in Italy's history. If the Communist Party stages a comeback, or if our good friend, Premier De Gasperi, loses, it'll mean a defeat to the entire free world. 4 years ago, millions of Make Democracy Live letters which you sent to the Italian people were a major contribution to the communist setback. So let's send an even greater number, this time, to defeat communism in Italy.
Commenting on the statement made by Drew Pearson on freedom of speech on radio networks, Thomas Folata, Vice President of the American Broadcasting Company, said, ABC and all the radio and television networks believe in and operate under a policy of freedom of speech. We at ABC present a variety of commentators expressing a variety of viewpoints on the news. By this method, we believe that the public can get a better understanding of political and economic issues and make their own decisions. ABC has no editorial policy, but strives to present a well-rounded news and commentary structure. And now, as Drew Pearson usually says, this is the way to make democracy live.